morning. We're going to get this meeting started. We have a quorum, so we're going to ask to have a roll call.
So good morning, everybody. At this time, I am only asking those board members attending in person to respond by saying here when I call your name. As a reminder for everybody, the button on the base is your power button. When it's red on top, it means you're on and on the recording. And if you are an alternate here on behalf of a member, please state so. Steve Wilson.
Here.
Yvette Drucker. Andy Thompson.
Thankful to be here.
Angela Cruz. Shelly Petrolia, and I believe we have her alternate, Julie Casale, on the line. So Joelle Flores.
Paula Busquet here as an alternate for Joelle Flores.
All right, we'll take you in a moment after we get the in-person.
Jim Koretsky is absent. Ronaldo Diaz.
Here.
Joni Brinkman.
Here.
Catherine Waldron. Melissa McKinley. Maria Marino, Maria Sachs is absent. Greg Weiss.
Here.
Shirley Lanier.
Here.
Fred Pinto.
Present.
Michael Napoleon.
Here.
Christy Fox. Joseph Peduzzi.
Here.
Chelsea Reed.
Here.
Robert Weinroth.
I'm here.
We have a quorum in person, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Okay. Do we have anybody who is online who would like to participate?
Yes, sir. We do have that. Commissioner Casale is present virtually. She has close contact with COVID, so she's not allowed in our office at this time. We have Commissioner Busquet. I believe I said that right. She also has concerns due to COVID and a recent medical procedure that's limiting her in person. And then Commissioner Marino, who is needed at home for caretaker reasons. So she is also present virtually.
Okay, if no one has any objections, we will admit the three virtual attendees into the meeting. Seeing no objections, show them as being admitted into the meeting.
Yes, sir.
Okay, we're now going to have the invocation and pledge of allegiance. Mayor Wilson, would you please do the honors? Everybody, please rise.
Good morning. Let us pray. Oh, Heavenly Father, we come before you once again with bowed heads and humble hearts. Thank you, as always, for your grace and your mercy. Realizing, Father, over and over again, that through your grace and your mercy, you've been better to us than we've been to ourselves. And with that, we say thank you. Thank you, Father, for being that beacon of hope during times like these. Father, you know that there's so much darkness in this world, and we feel sometimes that the darkness will overwhelm us when we are most vulnerable. Continue to be that beacon of light and share it upon us with your unconditional love and your need of protection. Help us to take your words to heart, even if the words in this sinful world are difficult to hear from time to time. Give us a heart of repentance and not a heart of defiance. Help us to let go of those things that give us false security and guide us and cleans us closer to you. And finally, Father, we ask a special blessing for the chairperson of this meeting. You know his heart, and all of us whom you have allowed to be assembled here today, realizing that we're no strangers to each other, disparate friends we have not yet met. We give you all the praises and the glory. Amen.
Amen.
Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Our Pledge of Allegiance.
To the flag of the United States of America.
America, and to the Republic for which it stands.
One nation, under God, indivisible, liberty
and justice for all.
Thank you, Mayor Wilson. It's always great to have you start our meetings off. Okay, do we have any modifications to the agenda?
No, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Do I have a motion to approve the agenda? I have a motion second. By Vice Weiss, second by Council Member Thompson. All in favor, all opposed. Show the agenda has been approved. All right, we're going to look for general public comments. And of course, anybody who would like to make a comment, we ask you to fill out a card and then we will invite you to the microphone. Do we have any cards?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay, then we will move on to our next order of business, which is comments from the chair and member comments. I have a couple of brief comments. If you've been watching the news, you know that there's been some move afoot for the county to waive the gas tax in the same fashion that the state is going to. As you know, they passed an ordinance or statute to waive gas tax in October for the state, which is about 25 cents per gallon. The county has about 12 cents per gallon. While the county commission has not taken a position on it yet, we are going to discuss it coming forward. I have personally had a conversation on the TV to say that I personally see it as a thing that we should probably not be doing, that a major portion of those dollars, of the $48 million, $32 million goes towards Palmtran. And so to have that cut at this time when we're trying to encourage people to go to public transportation would seem to be counterintuitive. And while certainly we all recognize that the shock of going to the gas pump these days is something to behold, I don't think that taking the 12 cents off the pump price is going to make a big difference to our residents. And the fact is that we have infrastructure that needs to be maintained, and we're trying to catch up with our infrastructure sales tax on the deferred maintenance already. So I think that that would be, again, personally feel that that would be a mistake. So I'm sure that conversation will continue to be brought forward. And as I said, I'm expecting the Board of County Commissioners will take that up at a future date. Also, we're going to have a very interesting conversation later on when we get to item 2C. We have a recommendation from the TAC, and I think it's going to give us an opportunity to discuss the issue that's been raised by them. And again, in line with our future plans as far as a potential transportation surtax. And I think this is certainly a good jumping off point for that. But we'll get to that when we get to 2C. That being said, I'm going to entertain comments from the board. And I see Mayor Pinto, your card is up.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Just wanted to share with the board that on April 28th, I attended the quarterly MPOAC meeting. It was my first meeting, so it was interesting. I was paying attention to a lot of things, and there was a lot of presentations, but nothing definitive was voted on or acted on, but we will be doing some workshop planning at our next meeting in July, so I'm looking forward to that. I think one of the items we have on the agenda today is something that was shared with us at that meeting, that is the legislative priorities by the MPOAC, and I think we're going to be discussing that as part of the agenda. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Is anybody else like to make a comment on the board? Seeing no further people jumping for their button, I will now recognize our interim executive director for her report.
Good morning, everyone. I would like to announce that we have two new staff members. We have a Planner One on the multimodal team, Valentina Facus. She recently graduated with her master's from FAU. Valentina, if you'd like to say hello. So we're really excited to have her join the team. And we also have Matthew Massa, who's our new intern on the planning team, that's actually doing his master's in planning from FSU, but he's a local resident of Wellington, actually. So we're really excited to have them join the team, and I just wanted to recognize them and introduce them to everyone. We're in May, it's National Bike Month, so we're really excited about that. I know we celebrate it in March for Florida Bike Month, but here's another opportunity to celebrate. And there's a ton of ideas at bikeleague.org/bikemonth if anyone would like to celebrate in their local communities. I also want to announce that on Monday, the federal government announced a new grant program to help local governments advance Vision Zero safety for planning and infrastructure projects. So that includes action plans for the safe streets and roads for all grant program. It's going to be $5 billion over the next 5 years. It's estimated $1 billion available this fiscal year. So please check that out. It's transportation.gov/SS4A. And there's our pre-application webinars, presentations, and upcoming presentations to assist local municipalities. So we're really excited about that as we try to improve safety and move Vision Zero forward. Also, the Active People Healthy Nation Champions Institute is accepting applications for the new round of champions. And we actually have a former champion, Councilmember Andy Thompson, and Mayor Reed is a current member of this institute, which really they only choose about, I think, 20 nationally. So it's a huge honor that we've had two from our board be part of this institute. So this will be the third year. If anyone's interested, please check it out and apply. Also, just a reminder, as we try to encourage more walking and biking, bicycle-friendly businesses, we're trying to encourage more businesses to be bicycle-friendly, and there's an application and a recognition for that open through June 15. And walk-friendly communities, also, it's a national program. We encourage our municipalities to apply for that. Also, the applications are due June 15. I just wanted to mention that the Port of Palm Beach is updating its master plan, and they're looking for public and partner participation in that effort. The TPA is participating in that, but we're also trying to promote participation in that update. The final plan will be completed by the end of this year, but the website's planportofpalmbeach.com. And also at our last meeting, we talked about rail safety crossings and what can be done for that. We looked into that a bit more and found out that the Department of Transportation is actually in the process of updating their action plan. So that's something that they have a draft available online, but lots of resources, and we're talking with them, potentially having them provide an information update at a future meeting or a webinar on that for those resources. We also talked about at the last meeting, potential, what are we doing about downtown West Palm Beach, intermodal coordination with a lot of different plans and efforts going on, including a new UF campus coming downtown. So we're about to kick off a work order with our consultants to facilitate bringing all of our partners downtown together for a pre and post workshop, gathering all the plans and trying to align those efforts and identify the next steps to solve both moving cars, but also moving people in a walkable environment. So that's something that stay tuned. We'll be announcing the dates for those workshops soon. And lastly, just want to remind everyone that we do encourage our members to attend transportation conferences, and we can reimburse that. There's three that I wanted to highlight coming up. Many of you maybe already heard about it, but on Thursday, June 6th, the county is hosting an economic summit focused on housing and transportation. So we will be there. Our chair will be there on a panel with our transportation partners. Encourage all of you to attend that conversation and that effort. Also, the following day, there's the Miami-Dade TPO is hosting a Smart Trends Transportation Summit with a lot of state and federal partners down in Miami. We did do a peer exchange a couple months ago. So if you didn't attend that, or if you did and you'd like to learn more, I encourage you to attend this event. And finally, there is a Floridians for Better Transportation summer camp, really talking about transportation issues here in Florida as a whole. And it happens to be in Boca Raton. So that's in July. And I encourage our members to attend. So that's my report. If anyone has any questions, I'm happy to follow up now or later.
Thank you, Valerie. I don't see any cards up. Just to comment on the economic summit, that was Commissioner Sachs's thought that it would make sense to have that in the near future. And as Valerie said, it's going to be focused essentially on housing and transportation. Valerie will be a moderator on transportation, and I'll be one of the panelists. And we certainly would love to have anybody who is available to come on down and hear what's going on. Those are two very important areas. All right, seeing no cards up again, we're going to move on now to the consent agenda. I call your attention to the fact that there are 8 items on the consent agenda, including adding the City of Westlake as a TAC member, adding a number, about 7 people, onto various advisory boards, including 2 for Westlake, assuming that this consent agenda is approved. Also, there's a 2-year extension for the legal services that are being offered to us by Weiss, Rota, Healthman, Cole, and Bierman. And that's basically all the items. There are some, you know, other items on there, the pretty administrative. If anybody has anything they want to remove from the consent agenda, please let me know. Mayor Reed?
I don't want anything removed, but I'm glad to see Westlake coming in and becoming more of a part of the TPA and getting some understanding of what we're trying to do here. And so just wanted to shout out thank you to the TPA for accommodating this new municipality.
Very good. All right. I'll look for a motion to approve the consent agenda. I got a motion by Mayor Wilson.
Second.
Second by Mayor Reed. All in favor, all opposed. Show the consent agenda is approved as submitted unanimously. Okay, we're now going to move on to our action items. And as I always promised you, we'll have you out of here by 11:30 if you have to leave as far as action items. And I know that Commissioner Kerner's staff has made it clear that he needs to be out of here by 11:30 and he's already departed. Okay, let's have a presentation on item 2A, and Ms. Kama, would you please do the honors?
Good morning, thank you. I'm here today to bring the final version of our fiscal year 2023 and 2024 Unified Planning Work Program, or UPWP. And just as a refresher, this is our two-year operational plan and budget for the agency. So it will begin July 1st, 2022 to June 30th of 2024. It constitutes our application for federal grant funds. And it says what we're going to accomplish during this time, who's going to do that, whether it's staff or consultants or both, when we plan to complete that effort, and then how much it's going to cost and where the funding will come from. We have seven core tasks that we perform. We engage the public, plan the system in the short range or five-year timeframe, plan the system in the long range or 20-year timeframe, prioritize funding, implement projects, collaborate with our partners, and then everything else required to administer this agency. From the draft that we brought to you in March, there have been some modifications that were requested. This process requires we do a draft, we submit it to FDOT and FHWA to review. And according to their comments, we made some adjustments. There was an additional amount of funding from the Federal Transit Administration, FTA, of $168,000. So we've incorporated that in both fiscal years. And we've added those funds to task two, plan the system in the short range, and we'll go mostly to corridor studies that we are working on in this next fiscal year. They also asked us to clarify an FTA carryover funding that we will have in the new UPWP. Those are funds that won't get expended in the current cycle. Current two-year cycle, but will get added to the next cycle. There were some document kind of administrative changes that were highlighted. The incorporation of our signed certifications and assurances. These are required for federal funding that we complete them and include them. In addition to execution dates and more about the inclusion of the FDOT District 4 planning activities and federal planning emphasis areas. So we have added those required items and then updated our table of contents. There was a request for greater clarity in how much we would be spending on legal services or how much we anticipate IT services, accounting system, and accounting services. These are largely professional services that are provided, and in the draft we'd put them in a larger grouping. It was just requested that we specify more how that breaks down. So we've done that. In addition, it's required that we have clear authorization to purchase software and any assets that we might need to perform the work here. Anything exceeding $5,000 requires an advanced approval from FDOT and FHWA. So we've identified that as necessary or left room so that they can give us authorization as we proceed through the UPWP. And last on this slide is the inclusion of our efforts on the functional classification and the urbanized boundary map with the new census. And that's a critical effort that we'll continue doing in the new UPWP. I did want to point out a few changes in how that rolled out in the document. In the draft, which you see on top, we didn't break down the consultant effort for that task activity. So if you look on the below section for the final, we've just identified how much consultant support we anticipate for that effort. And by getting that approved in this UPWP, we can proceed and assign work orders to the consultants as required. There was a request that we'd be more specific in the delivery dates as much as possible. Some things aren't practical or can't be done that way, but we did an additional effort to anything that we could have put a date, a month and a year to, we've done that. So as you'll see here in the draft, it said annually. And then in the final version, we said in December of each year. And then it was requested that we clarify what public engagement meant or what we intended by that. Our public engagement is very important. It's one of our core tasks as a metropolitan planning organization. So among social media, among the many efforts that our team is doing, they asked, do we specify, are we doing meetings and workshops? We are, we just hadn't said that language. So we just added that to clarify, yes, we do meetings, we do workshops, surveys, public comments, anything that we can to reach out to the public, get their input, to make our plans as thorough as possible. With the additional funding, our revenue for fiscal year 2023 will be $5.1 million, and in 2024 will be $4.9 million. And our fund, again, our expenses as an agency break down into those that are funded by grant activities, which is near 95%, and then the locally funded activities that are funded through member dues that we do to make sure our effort, our agency is as effective as possible. And again, our budget's 5.1 in 2023 and 4.9 in fiscal 24. And where we stand in this process, in March, we brought the drafts and then submitted those for comment and review. We've now incorporated those comments and reviews and we bring it to you today for adoption. Upon your adoption, that would get transmitted to FDOT and FHWA for approval and final execution. And then we start that new budget cycle on July 1st. And then today we're seeking a motion to adopt.
Matthew, question for you. How does the money that we're going to be seeing from the federal government for the bipartisan infrastructure funding bill get represented in these numbers? Or is it going to be a completely separate accounting for those numbers?
So there's two aspects to our funding as an agency. For the actual planning activities, we did see an increase, and that is incorporated. We did see an increase from fiscal year 21-22 to 23-24. That did increase, and that's directly a result of that. The additional infrastructure funding, the bulk of it that actually goes to accomplishing those efforts, that's seen through the TIP and other products that we provide.
I'm assuming there'll be grant opportunities going forward. As those grant opportunities make themselves available and we are granted money, you'll make amendments to this document, or how is that going to be handled?
It will depend on those opportunities. A lot of those opportunities will be for kind of direct funding to do a project and may not actually apply to the planning effort that we do here. So if it's a substantial increase, say it's a $10 million project and an extra $1 million for planning, then we would adjust our UPWP. But if it's just $10 million to build a project, we wouldn't need to make a change here in this document.
Very good. Okay, I see two cards up. I'll take our interim director first.
Sure. Thank you, Matthew. Great presentation. Just to reiterate, if we receive more, we're still waiting to hear from FHWA on how much or if how much we will receive more in planning dollars. If that happens, if there's an increase, we would amend the UPWP and bring it back to you on what we would be spending those dollars on. In terms of the grants, as Matthew mentioned, if there's more money for our grant programs, then there would just be more money and we would be able to fund more projects. So,
very good. Mayor Pinto? Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was Mayor Pinto. Vice Weiss.
Vice Mayor. Thank you very much. And thank you, Matthew, thanks for the presentation. I just want to clarify. So what's in front of us today in what we're voting on is for planning purposes only and planning budget.
That's correct. Yes.
Thank you.
You're good. Okay. Do we have any comments from the general public, Margie?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay. And you're following if any hands are raised by our virtual members. Okay. Okay. I'm going to be seeking a motion now to adopt the resolution approving the fiscal year 2023 to 2024 Unified Planning Work Program.
So moved.
I have a motion by Councilman Napoleone. I have a second by Mayor Pinto. All in favor, all opposed, show that is approved unanimously.
Nay.
I'm sorry, no. I had
we do have some votes. Nays, huh?
Yes, I had Joseph Peduzzi and I believe Christy Fox as well.
Mr. Peduzzi.
Due to the potential inclusion of the State Road 7 extension project.
How odd. Okay, so we have one nay. Any other nays?
The other one is Christy. Oh, I'm sorry. I have my three.
Okay,
I have Peduzzi, Weiss, and Fox.
Okay, so we will show. You know what? Let's go ahead and do a roll call just so you have the right numbers.
Okay, thank you. So the motion on the floor is a motion to adopt a resolution approving the fiscal year 2023 to 2024 Unified Planning Work Program. Steve Wilson.
Yes.
Yvette Drucker.
Yes.
Andy Thompson.
Yes.
Angela Cruz is absent. Julie Casale.
Yes. Did Paula you hear Busquet? Me?
Yes, I did. I'm sorry.
Okay. Yes. Paula,
thank you. Jim Koretsky is absent. Reynaldo Diaz.
Yes.
Joni Brinkman.
Yes.
Catherine Waldron is absent. Dave Kerner. Yes. Maria Marino.
Yes.
Maria Sachs is absent. Greg Weiss.
No.
Shirley Lanier. Yes. Fred Pinto.
Fred. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
Michael Napoleone.
Yes.
Christy Fox. Joseph Peduzzi.
No.
Chelsea Reed.
Yes.
Robert Weinroth.
Yes.
It passed with three opposed.
Very good. Thank you. Okay, let's move on to item B. And Deputy Director Early.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Andrew Euler, Deputy Director of Program Development. Today I'll be discussing the 2022 legislative policy positions. What was provided in the backup is you'll see two documents. You'll see the Metropolitan Planning Organization Advisory Council policy positions, which is our recommendation for you all today. To endorse, and then you'll see a draft of our TPA-created policy positions. As background, this is a strategic plan item we have this past year as to advocate for TPA-adopted legislative and policy positions. And so the outcome is to amend laws and policies on those. So to push those initiatives that we have in our vision here at TPA. A bit of background about how we got to this point. It is a strategic plan initiative, as I just mentioned, and then you all adopted 2021 positions, the ones that are in the backup there, back in 2021. And then right now we have a contract with Holland and Knight for federal legislation. So a lot of the stuff with the infrastructure surtax, the federal legislation, the bipartisan infrastructure bill, they did a lot of education for us, and they've been keeping us abreast on issues with that and a new funding that's available. And so we've really been using those that contract for that purpose. We also utilize the MPOAC for state legislation. So when it comes to anything that's being pushed at the state level, we also have that avenue as well. They have an annual technical workshop that Mayor Pinto just mentioned in the summer, and they have adoption of MPOAC policy positions in the fall. How it sort of plays out on the staff level about how we implement these positions is really we advocate for positions when opportunities arise. So we're not always proactively seeking these through trying to push these positions, but when there's opportunities for us to provide feedback on federal, state, and regional policies and standards, we push for these positions. And then we try to push for these positions during the MPOAC adoption of their policies. So in the backup, you will see, as I mentioned, those two different sets of policy positions, the one from the MPOAC and the one from the TPA staff created one. Just to tell you a little bit more about those two, so how it works out implementation wise. Before in 2021, we adopted those TPA policy positions, which is really a combination of a lot of positions that come from our regional transportation plan, our long range transportation plan, our Vision Zero action plan, and also the MPOAC positions. And so they're really localized to Palm Beach County. This does require more staff resources to collect and put these all together and work through those, and then to also stay on top of those issues. And then, so that would also cost more resource when it comes to consultants if we need those to track and push for. On the MPOAC side, these are statewide MPO issues. So this is a collection of everyone working together at the MPO levels to push issues together. Less staff commitment, they're already pushing these issues and they stay on top of them. And then it saves money on consultants really when we're talking about staff commitment to this. So both these policy positions went to the executive committee recently, and their recommendation was to adopt or endorse the MPOAC positions. And what we can do with this is really provide input during the MPOAC policy positions creation, working with our partners at the state level, and then bring those back to you all to endorse and look through those positions. And then we can stay engaged in that process through the MPOAC because they're taking the lead on that. And then if there is specific issues that we will really want to push, that you all would want to push further and prioritize, we can then assign our staff to that specifically instead of having a larger umbrella of positions to track. And this is providing your backup, but this is just the seven policy positions of the MPOAC. I'm highlighting more of the larger scopes of those. I'll just go through them quickly. The first is to support an increase in transportation investment through dedicated and sustainable funding sources and looking for innovative financing options. The next is to regulate distracted driving, to hold virtual meetings during declared emergencies, plus a period of 90 days past those emergency dates. The next is the strategic animal system funds to be used on non-CIS designated facilities to improve enhancements on the CIS. So that one is the major roadways in our county. It's Southern Boulevard, 95, Turnpike, B-Line, and US 27. So that would allow funds to be a little bit more flexible than just being spent on those roadways, to be spent on parallel roadways or other facilities if it still improves the CIS. So a little bit more flexibility in improving the network. Flexible and predictable funding for transit at the state level, and recognizing that federal MPO transportation planning funds should not be regarded as state funds for purposes of expenditure. So right now, when we get federal planning funds, what Matthew just talked about in the UPWP, they are required to follow state procedures when it comes to expenditures. This provides it where it just has to meet the federal requirements for those, instead of just all those state restrictions as well. And then the last one is to support innovative mobility solutions and policies to address transportation needs, but ensuring that citizens are protected from malicious tampering with technologies. And that's really all I have for you. So our recommendation today is to endorse the MPOAC legislative positions.
Thank you. And just as you see in our notes today, the executive committee had unanimously recommended participating in the MPOAC process rather than having our own independent program. Obviously, with Mayor Pinto participating in the MPOAC meetings, we feel that it would be more, it would be a better fit for us to have a unified strategy rather than having individualized legislative agendas for Palm Beach and Miami-Dade and whatever. So Mayor Pinto, we're going to put that on your shoulders to make sure anything that is of an interest to us here, you'll carry forward to the MPOAC.
You looking for a motion?
I'm looking for a motion.
I move to approve recommendation as stated by Chair.
I have a second by the mayor. Do we have any comments from the general public?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay, seeing no comments and seeing no more cards up, let's see if we can do this by voice. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? I see no opposition. Show this unanimous. Thank you. Okay, we're gonna move on to item C. As I said, item C is a jumping off point for, I think, some very valuable conversation. And so I'm going to invite Valerie now to make a presentation on this item that's being brought to us today by the TAC.
Thank you. So I am presenting a request from the TPA has three advisory committees, our technical advisory committee, our citizens advisory committee, and our Vision Zero advisory committee. So at our last technical advisory committee, we had we presented our draft tip, which we're going to talk about later. But as that was being presented, the committee brought up that, why do we have this project, the Tri-Rail Coastal Link project from West Palm Beach to Jupiter, this desired priority project of the board, why does it continue to be delayed? And we have a placeholder really for project design and environmental review in the pipeline for this. But the reality is that it continues to get delayed until we have funding for operations and maintenance, an access fee to actually run on the FEC's right of way, because it's private right of way, and how much would that cost, and also how the money to construct it. So it's a placeholder because it's a priority, but it's something that's continues to move forward. So they made a motion to request the board make a resolution to the Palm Beach County Board of County Commissioners to authorize a countywide referendum to create a dedicated source of operating funding to support the 561 plan with specific emphasis on the Northern Extension Tri-Rail this project. So it passed 18-4 with representatives of Palm Beach County Planning, Engineering, City of Riviera Beach, and the City of Boca dissenting. We're bringing this to you because they requested we bring this to you for staff direction, but I'm gonna provide a little bit more background on this project. So on the right, you'll see the yellow line is what we're talking about. Tri-Rail began service in 1989, double-tracked their corridor in 2006. The Tri-Rail Coastal Link project has been proposed and talked about for a while, starting in 2005 with studies and outreach. In 2009, the TPA said this is a priority to have this extension. In 2013, there was a collective effort between all the parties to the regional planning councils, the MPOs in South Florida, FDOT, SFRTA, to do more analysis. And they did station area opportunity study, market analysis, a refinement report. And so we have identified the stations that we would like, but it continues to be the Tri-Rail runs on CSX, which is FDOT public. This desire is on a private right-of-way where Brightline runs on the eastern side on FEC. So it continues to be a desire. Brightline now runs there. But we actually had the same conversation, and some of you were on the steering committee of the board in 2017. We said this funding for this study is in fiscal year 2020. If we want to keep it there, we need to have all these things to be able to proceed. And we had a committee, the board met a couple times, but we hit a dead end because we need to proceed. We need a Northwood crossover, which actually in that little map, you see a green line. That's the connection for their trains from Tri-Rail to actually leave their tracks and get onto the FEC tracks. So that's actually been constructed and it's completed. That was in 2018. We also need the Northern Layover Facility, which is a priority project for the TPA, has been a funding partner to SFRTA, and that's currently in procurement. Then we need a capital funding plan, which is how much is this all going to cost in capital. We have identified the stations, but those costs could change depending on when we're actually ready to move forward. And to move forward, we need that local funding source to run additional operations and maintenance for Tri-Rail, and an access fee, which we can't. It's not in our control to make FEC private property provide us access and charge us. We need to know how much they would charge us. We don't know. They haven't said. So we need those two things, and it just continues to kind of be carried over. So that's kind of the status quo. We'd like this project to happen, but it's going to continue carrying over until we get those two things in place. So I do want to mention that this is part of a bigger a bigger picture desire. This corridor, the Tri-Rail Coastal Link, and especially this extension to the north is part of our transit desires in our 2045 long-range transportation plan that we adopted, in addition to other desires for transportation, including roadway capacity projects, traffic signal investments, municipal mobility services, and ped bike improvements, tier one priorities. So it is part of our overall transit desires network that we are looking to evaluate and to confirm and to refine. So our next steps to that plan that we're currently working on is refining that mobility vision, conducting corridor studies on those key network of corridors. And I'll just mention that this is not the lines on the right, the blue lines. We called it the 561 plan because it's five north south corridors, six east west corridors that have the highest density of people and jobs per mile to warrant a frequent limited stop service. It does not mean that there wouldn't be an express service to a farther away place, but this is just where it would warrant really frequent service and that we want to evaluate further. There are also our currently highest transit ridership corridors and our highest corridors for pedestrian and bicycle crashes. So it's where we see the biggest need to evaluate for enhanced transit and ped bike improvements. So we've studied US-1. That's a rendering of in downtown Lake Worth, and we're working with municipalities along the corridors to improve pedestrian bicycle facilities, as well as working with PalmTran, prioritizing funding for electric buses and things like that. For the other corridors, we're working on the Okeechobee State Road 7 study, the planning visioning study right now, and we plan to look at the rest of those corridors over the next year to determine preferred alternatives. What would the cost be? What refining that vision further with the local municipalities and roadway owners. In addition, we are about to get started on our 2050 long-range transportation plan. So every 5 years, we have to update our long-range transportation plan. And this is a huge effort that we have to work with everybody to refine that vision, determine what our needs and desires are, what is going to be cost feasible and what is not going to be cost feasible. So that's something we're about to get started, which will tie into all of this. And we don't have those operations and maintenance dollars because we as a TPA can't prioritize those dollars. We only prioritize capital. So that is something that if the county and all of our municipalities, if we're all ready and when we are ready to do that, we do need to find a local funding source. So that's something that a conversation that we have to have, that we have to determine what that is. As Mayor Weinroth mentioned, that could be a transportation surtax at the next opportunity in November 2024, but it's something that we're refining and working on right now. So not only refining that vision, but also communicating to the public and to our partners, sharing those studies and plans, launching an educational website. We as an MPO cannot campaign, we can't lobby, but we can educate. So sharing all this information, hosting summits, having community meetings, gathering all that information, and then doing that outreach. Ultimately, we will need public-private partnerships and the economic development community to step in and kind of take this forward if we really are going to go after some sort of a ballot or referendum. So we are working on that. We're working on that roadmap over the next 2 years. And what does that all look like? So I wanted to provide that background to this request, and then coming back to the request, bring this to you to ask for direction to staff. This is my last slide. It's back to the motion that they passed. And what we're asking today is to say, would you like to direct staff to draft a resolution with this language or different language and bring to the next meeting for approval? Or would you not like to do a resolution at this time? It's really just bringing to you this request from them, but I wanted to provide that additional background information.
Thank you, Valerie, for the presentation. I'm going to recognize Mr. Peduzzi in a second. I think, first of all, I commend the TAC for its thoughts on this. I think we all agree that a dedicated funding source for transportation is a goal that we all want to be able to reach at some point. I'm just concerned that we are not at a point yet where we have a real comprehensive view of what we're looking for. And I don't want to see us do this piecemeal. I think we're going to have one bite of the apple. And if we're looking at getting to 2024 with a comprehensive plan for a transportation surtax, if that's what we're going to call it, then we need a lot more work before we start going down that road. I'm wondering, is the executive director for SFRT on the line?
Yes, sir.
Ms. Abrams, are you there?
Right, we'll Mr. Chairman, can you hear me?
We got you now.
All right. Well, anyway, I'm available if you have any questions.
All right. Well, before I take comments from our board, I wanted to give you an opportunity to opine on this proposed resolution.
Well, I thought Valerie presented it well. I want to assure the agency that from our perspective, this is not a dormant project. As Valerie pointed out, we are actively putting a lot of the pieces in place to eventually provide the service. The Northwood crossover has been completed, for example. Beyond that, we've been working very closely with the municipalities, with Treasure Coast Regional Planning Council to and the developers in North County to identify stations. Also, as Valerie pointed out, we're progressing on relocating our northern layover. So we're putting these pieces in place, but as has been pointed out, there are financial question marks that still need to be answered primarily by FEC as to what the charge for the access fee would be. So as far as going forward with identifying a funding source, it's really premature in the sense that we really wouldn't know what that would be. And then, of course, all the other issues that you point out as far as competing interests, both in transportation, but also other interests that the county has that they've been discussing. Once in a while, I still tune into your meetings and see the conversations about housing and environmental lands, et cetera. So beyond that, Mr. Chairman, glad to answer any questions that you or the board may have.
Thank you, Mr. Abrams. We appreciate your input. And I just want to let the board know I received a text message from our executive director for PalmTran, Clinton Forbes, and he states he's watching this via YouTube. And he said, those would have been exactly my comments. We need a comprehensive plan for a surtax. Margie, what do you have?
I don't have any public comments, but I do have Commissioner Marino also raised her hand.
All right, let's take Commissioner Marino and then start on the floor here. Commissioner Marino, you're recognized.
Thank you. And Steve, thank you for being online today. Can you all hear me?
Yes, we can.
Thank you. Yes, this has been something that's been discussed for a very, very long time. I think when you saw the slide, it said Mayor Marino 2017, where we met in Commissioner at that point in time, Commissioner Valachet's office. You know, the biggest stumbling block here is Brightline and just getting access to the track and then the cost of the platforms. But because there's been some doubt as to whether Brightline is going to even allow access on that, by asking the county commissioners to do a ballot initiative for this is premature because there are so many other things. And I hate to say we have to kick this can down the road a little bit more, but we do because we're just not prepared for this at this point in time. There's too many questions that we still have. And there are, as you said, with all the housing and other referendum that are going to be or may be on the ballot in the future, our voters are going to have fatigue. So I don't believe that this is something that we need to even continue discussing. So that's my perspective. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Marino. Just to update you as far as the two potential referendums on the November ballot, the Board of County Commissioners still has not made a decision with respect to either the environmental bond, which would be $100 million, or the housing bond, which would be $250 million or $200 million. Not sure where we are right now, but that's going to be addressed in the next month or so. And so those are potentially going to be on this ballot in November. I'm going to go from right to left. Commissioner Kern, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to echo your comments. I appreciate the report and vision that the executive director of the TPA gave, and certainly a litany of laudable public policy goals within this vision. But to echo your comments, I know that it's not the intent of the TPA to get this on this current election cycle's ballot. But as you pointed out, in addition to our own general obligation bonds that we may or may not authorize, we just authorized to be on the ballot $1 million ad valorem tax by the school board. And I think by pushing this forward to the board, it may confuse some issues. It also would be the catalyst for other county processes and analyzing this to present it to the board. And I just think that it's premature.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mayor Reed, you're up.
Well, I echo what everyone else is saying. However, I do want to add in that this is something we do need to bring up. Now is not the time. I would not like to do a resolution at this time. But I do think it's important that we think about what we're really doing here, which is keeping transparency in government and letting our citizens know what we're doing with their taxpayer dollars. And if we're already asking for two other possible bonds on the county commission ballot, on our ballot, this is way too much for us to be able to do a proper educated position, especially having to pull in every stakeholder. We have to pull in not just the county, but municipalities and every stakeholder in transportation as well. And we need to do it right. We need to make sure we know where all of that funding will go before we make it happen. So yes, I think we should not make a resolution, but I do think it's something we should be planning and touching on. Maybe the executive committee can work on it as well so that when it does come time, we are prepared.
Very good. Thank you, Vice Chair. Okay, Mayor Pinto, you're up.
Yeah, just heard some information I'd like to get some clarity on. So you're saying the county commissioners have already instituted ballot initiatives for 2024?
No. What we've said is we have approved the school board going for $1 million, and that'll be on the November ballot. The Board of County Commissioners is still debating whether there will be two general obligation bonds, one potentially for environment and one potentially for housing. Those have not been approved yet. If they are approved, that would be in the 22 bond. Nothing has been discussed about 24 yet.
Oh, okay. So you're talking about the coming November elections.
Yes.
2024.
Right.
Okay. I just wasn't clear on that. Quite frankly, I think we need to step back for a moment and look at what we've been trying to get accomplished here at the TPA for, I'm going to say at least a year and a half. We've been talking about the long range strategy and trying to create a different environment for Palm Beach County transportation. And we've been talking about it. I think we've been looking at it from a long range perspective, not near term projects, and really looking at creating a public transportation capability that will encourage people to not drive and take public transportation because it would be just as comfortable for them than if they drove their own car. That's a very lofty and ambitious challenge and goal, I think, for us to go after. But I think we're at the beginning stages of building the foundation to make that happen. And I think we've had many conversations here at this board meeting about the necessity of creating a new funding source for transportation purposes that does not exist today in Palm Beach County. We're doing peer group reviews and looking at other counties across the state of Florida. In particular, we have our two southern counties who already have this kind of mechanism in place. And we've been looking at that and trying to understand how they went about doing it and some of the concerns that have to be addressed. I think the question, I want to be clear what the question before us today is. And I think the question is, at this point in time, should we as a board codify our intention that and to say that it is our, we want to present to the Board of County Commissioners to consider putting this in place. And in particular, we've always been targeting the 2024 ballot because of all the things that would be required and work that needs to be done before we could get to that point. That's all we can do as a board. And one of the things it would do for us as a board, if we were to make that resolution to move forward with that request to the county commissioners, it would now allow us as members of the board to be able to talk about this, advocate for it, respond to different questions at different public events, and not worry about, are we violating the Sunshine Law because there are members of the board that may be present when we have those conversations or questions. This will get us beyond that point of worrying about the Sunshine Law and us being able to talk about and answer questions and engage the citizens in our different cities about this potential. So for that reason, I think it's important. I fully agree that making that such a resolution to the county commissioners is just the beginning of the work. There's so much work that needs to be done. Clearly, we have to clarify and come up with the ground rules, how that money is spent, how it's distributed among the cities, among the county. That's all that work needs to be done. But I think for us to really do that in an earnest way, either we're going to formalize that's our position or we're not as a board. That's kind of, I think, where we are right now. So
thank you, Mayor.
Thank you.
Vice Mayor.
Thank you. A couple of points. I agree with the majority of the comments have been said already. However, I think I share the concern it's premature. I would also ask that maybe the consideration be made for before we move forward on something like that the municipalities take a position on it as well, so that, you know, before the TPA weighs in, there's support from the 39 municipalities, or at least the majority of them, to move forward with such a proposal. I think we also I think most of us share the understanding that there is a need for a dedicated funding source, but I think this is premature at this point in time. And then there's a secondary discussion I think at some point we need to have, and that is the process of how things get on our agenda and the responsibility of these different committees. So I'll leave my comments there, but I would not be supportive of us moving forward at this point in time.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. And let's come back around to that discussion about the agenda item after we dispose of this. Yeah, and I think that that's certainly worthy at least a conversation. So Commissioner Peduzzi, you're up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I agree with the comments made by my colleague, Commissioner or Vice Mayor Weiss. Aside from that larger discussion, if we were going to address this issue now or going to vote on this issue now, I just wanted to confirm that although there's an emphasis on Tri-Rail, this 561 plan still includes the State Road 7 extension project. And that if approved, if our vote and if the subsequent referendum are approved, that would potentially actually be on the ballot also. It wouldn't just be the Tri-Rail, it would be the State Road 7 extension plan for funding, correct?
I think, Commissioner, if this gets to a point where we are at a ballot initiative, we're going to be very focused as far as items being delineated that are going to be part of this bond or this additional sales tax. And we're talking about a sales tax. I think it's going to be very similar to what we do with the IST. We would put together a list of projects. We'd have a committee that would be able to go through those projects and identify which ones would be and would not be approved. So, and I can see some conversation, obviously, from your side of the aisle here as far as what projects you would be willing to have in that list and what you would not want to see on that list. But I think that's a conversation again for another day.
Okay, thank you. I was just responding to what was put up on the board that it looked like it was included.
Valerie, you want to address
that? I'll chime in. The map that was put on the board of the transportation desires from the 2045 long-range transportation plan does have that line from State Road 7 that's been on there forever, but the reason it was still on there was because of that it needed to be on there for FDOT to continue down its process. The need for a local transportation surtax or local funding source is really, we can prioritize FDOT, we fund capital dollars, but we can't, if we're going to want enhanced transit, frequent transit, more service and better service than what we have today, we're going to have a local funding source to match the federal dollars for transit. So, yeah, it's on that map of the enhanced the transportation desires, but I think that's a more near-term project versus a lot of the other lines that are on there that are going to take a longer time. So that particular project is something that will hopefully get resolved one way or another. But what we're talking about more is the into the future, how are we going to move people around in transit and how are we going to fund enhanced transit desires? So
And I would interject at this point that we're going to have to demonstrate to the voters that we're not just playing a shell game here, that not, we're not taking one project that we could have had from this funding source and now switch it into this funding source. These are going to have to be new projects, enhancements to service specifically. And, you know, we've been down to Miami and we've heard how they went through the process of getting the voter approval. And so we're going to have to be very careful that the voters don't view this just as a way of increasing taxes by creating another funding source and now being able to split the cost between two pots of money. So, you know, I think that that's going to be something we'll have to address, Valerie.
Yeah, and I wanted to mention in those in the slides that I showed about next steps, refining this mobility vision, what are all our collective desires and how much does that cost, and continuing that conversation, that communication. Vice Mayor Weiss mentioned, you know, really getting community, the support from our local municipalities. So once we further refine this, going to all our municipalities and asking for a resolution of support and getting on the same page of, is this, do we agree this is what we want in your community? So that's further down the line, but there's more steps that need to be taken.
Mayor Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As many of you know, I represent three cities by having a seat at the table here. City of South Bay, City of Pahokee, and City of Belgrade. And I will tell you, the Glades community do not support this motion for two reasons. One is that, as indicated by a majority of you, there needs to be a more comprehensive approach. Two, we noticed that on 561 plan, there's nothing about the Glades community, not even the Pontrain Express system. And we wonder why is that. If we're really gonna be inclusive for Palm Beach County, we need to make sure that the folks in the Western community, which is the Glades, be included as well. So we will be saying no to this motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor, and we appreciate those comments. Okay, I have Mayor Pinto would like to speak again.
Mayor, I don't know why you have the impression that the Glades environment would not be included in this strategy. One, we're talking a long-term strategy, and two, absolutely. Connectivity to the Glades in, area and all the cities, towns that are out there, well, a big part of the future of what we need to be looking at in terms of, that's what we talk about when we're talking about enhanced transportation and providing an option for people who may not have cars or people who decide, you know, they don't need a second car, whatever it may be. But that is, you know, the notion that you would think that they're not included is absolutely not correct. I just want to tell you that.
Mr. Chair, by all means, if that's the case, thank you, sir. That's the case. I just have to see it, and I don't see it. That's what I'm saying.
And look, I think it's clear that what is in front of us today is a very focused request, that it is the 561 plan with specific emphasis on the northern extension of Tri-Rail. I think from the comments I'm hearing here today, we are all in agreement pretty much that this is really not yet gelled as far as how we want to approach this, if there's going to be consensus that we want to go in that direction. I think there's a lot more work that needs to be done. And to your comments, Mayor Wilson, obviously the Glades needs to be incorporated into this comprehensive plan. East-west commuting from not only the Glades, but out to Arden, out to the communities along Southern has got to be part of what we're going to be discussing for the next 20, 30, 40 years. So there's a lot more that needs to be done. And I think that this is really, this is a good catalyst for this conversation today, and it demonstrates that we have a lot of work to do between now and a point in time if we are of a mind to take this to the voters. Okay. Commissioner Kerner, you're back up.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to make a motion to postpone this item until sometime after the general election in 2022 and to bring it back at the chair's discretion or the executive director. And I don't want to cast it as a vote, or I don't want to cast a motion as denying this, because I don't want future boards and members to look back and think that was a substantive evaluation of the proposal. So just postpone until a later time.
Second.
All right, so I have a motion by Commissioner Kerner, seconded by the vice chair. Let the record show that Vice Mayor Cruz has joined us. Vice Mayor, we have been discussing the potential of a request by the TAC to put a request to the Board of County Commissioners to put a resolution on, and I'm sure you've read the agenda. If you have any comments on it, we'll welcome those at this point. No? Okay.
Mr. Chair, if I can make a comment.
Absolutely, Mayor.
Thank you, sir. My colleague, Mayor Pinto, I just want the record to reflect that we're not saying no in terms of its entirety. We're just saying you need to have a more comprehensive approach, as Mayor Kerner do his motion. So I will be supporting this motion so we can have more details. It's like putting the cart before the horse. What I look at. Okay.
We shouldn't do that. That's not good transportation planning, right?
Yes, Mayor Pinto, yeah. Yes.
Okay, can you clarify the motion that's on the table?
The motion on the table is just to postpone until after the November elections. That would address this specific item. I think we can still have conversations about next steps, and I think that certainly is worthy.
Okay, the reason why I'm asking is two things. Is that a time certain motion?
No, I don't think it's a time certain. It's just after November.
And are we committing to doing some of the work that we know that needs to be done? As we all said, there's a lot more work and planning between now and that time, as opposed to...
I think that that's worthy of conversation after we dispose of this motion.
Okay.
Okay. So we have a motion, and that was Commissioner Kerner and seconded by Mayor Reed. Let's do a roll call on this just to make it abundantly clear what we have as far as a vote.
Yes, sir. So to be clear, the motion on the floor is to postpone this item until after the November election. And then I did have that... Commissioner Kerner, that you said that the chair or the director is welcome to bring it back at any time.
Yeah, I don't want to confine it to...
To like a specific date. It's just...
Sure.
Okay.
And I'm not familiar with how the agenda is set and what authorities are in place, but it should be without prejudice. Anyone can bring it back, really, just not before November 2022.
Understood. So if you can say a or nay when I call your name. Steve Wilson.
Yay.
Yvette Drucker.
Yay.
Andy Thompson.
Yes.
Angela Cruz. Julie Casale.
Yes.
Paula Busquet.
Yes.
Jim Kretzky is absent. Ronaldo Diaz.
Yes.
Joni Brinkman.
Yes.
Catherine Waldron is absent. Dave Kerner.
Yes.
Maria Marino.
Yes.
Maria Sachs is absent. Greg Weiss.
Aye.
Yes, thank you. Shirley Lanier. Fred Pinto.
Yes.
Michael Napoleon.
Yes.
Christy Fox. Joseph Peduzzi.
Yes.
Chelsea Reed.
Yes.
Robert Weinroth.
Yes.
It passes unanimously, Mr.
Thank you very much. All right. The point was made, I think, by the vice mayor that how this item came onto our agenda today. And I guess it's worthy of some conversation. I had conversation with the interim executive director on this, and I saw it as being an appropriate way for this matter to be brought before us, that we had a majority vote by the TAC. They felt that this was something they wanted to bring to our attention. If they had sent a representative to make a presentation, I think it would have been in order. And I think that the way we have addressed this today and disposed of it, I think is a good way of, number one, dealing with the issues that are coming from the advisory boards and letting them know that we're not just ignoring what they are doing, that we are taking what they're saying and we are listening and we are deliberating on those items. I'll hear any comments on the process of bringing this onto the agenda. If you feel that this is an appropriate method of doing that, Vice Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to request then that we have staff bring back for discussion the roles, the mission, roles and responsibilities of these various committees to make sure, because when I looked at the website of the TPA regarding the roles or the what was described for the TAC, I didn't see anything in there that would include something like this item. And if that needs to be addressed, and if this body feels like that is an appropriate area, then it should be part of that direction. But I just didn't see it in there. I think it warrants further discussion, and I don't think today is probably the right day, because I think we should have staff have an opportunity to put a presentation together and have a fuller discussion on it.
Okay, so let's have a report in the future and just see if we want to codify this, just to make it clear that the process of then bringing something before us by the advisory committees. All right, good. All right, that ends our action items. So anybody who has someplace else they must be, you are released. And those of you who are able to stay, I hope you will, because we have some very important information items. So I'm now going to ask that we have Jason Price present 3A.
Good morning, everyone. So annually, I bring the draft transportation improvement program to you. And this year, this is an informational item that you'll see again next month for formal adoption. And this is the bulk of the work that we do is in this draft transportation improvement program. And it covers fiscal year 23 through 27. And we'll go over the projects. So our mission is to collaboratively plan, prioritize, and fund the transportation system. And by way of this, the Transportation Improvement Program, this particular document, that is the funding mechanism to fund the transportation system and all the projects within it. And the development of the TIP, it first begins with selecting those projects, incorporating those projects into the list of priority projects that you see in months to come and previously. We incorporate all of those projects into the draft tentative work program that FDOD produces, and that's the prioritization process of prioritizing the projects that we want to see in the TIP. After that process is complete, we then start to build the transportation improvement program, which is before you today as an informational item. And so that's what you see on the bottom in terms of the timeline of the yearly process that it takes to get to where we are today. And formal adoption will follow in June. And then once it's formally adopted, we'll begin to operate under this particular document in months to come after it's formally adopted. So the Transportation Improvement Program it's broken down into sections, and it lists all of our TPA priority projects under three particular sections, which is state road modifications, local initiatives, and transportation alternatives, which is the two annually competitive grant programs that we administer here at the TPA. In addition to the TPA priorities, at list the bulk of it is the FDOT priority projects and other projects from both CIS capacity, which makes up I-95 and the Turnpike, as well as other FDOT and local projects and other modes of transportation, which include airport, railroad, and seaport. With building all of these projects, they also have to be operated and maintained. And so there's a specific sections for major maintenance and operation and maintenance of both the roadway and the transit system. When you look through the executive summary or the full document, you'll see a collection of summary tables that give you an overall view of all of the TPA priority projects. They're first listed by the year and the prioritization of all of those projects in those summary tables. Then there's some location and description information. And then there's a block of 4 years that are the common years that stay within the TIP as we go annually through the process. What's significant about a draft TIP document and each year when I bring this to you is the addition of a new fifth year, which is fiscal year 27. That is the new year that is included in this particular document. And that's where the new funding and new projects you'll see populate into this document. Another big picture view of the Transportation Improvement Program is a snapshot here of all of the different sections that you see in the TIP document. Totals about $3.5 billion in total for all the projects that make up this particular document. The lion's share is CIS capacity, which includes I-95 and Turnpike. And Turnpike is a specific agency that has a bulk of the projects that you hear in the next few slides that make up the state funding portion of the CIS capacity breakout that you see before you on this particular slide. So with that, I'm going to turn over to my colleague, Connor, and he's going to go over the strategic intermodal system and the state road modifications.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you all for having me here today. My name is Connor Campobasso with Palm Beach TPA. And since the CIS capacity projects make up such a large portion of funding, we wanted to break that out for you. So on the slide here, you can see the total amount that's programmed for the next 5 years. So that's about almost $1.5 billion in funding for the CIS network. In that, we do have some projects coming in for construction in the next 5 years. So for the Turnpike, almost $900 million in Turnpike widening, and as well as two interchange projects. For the 95 network, we have 11 interchanges totaling almost $400 million. And then we also wanted to highlight the Beeline Highway project, which is going to be widening and intersection modification. And that's coming in at $156 million. So looking at the Turnpike a little bit more, in total, there's over $900 million in Turnpike funding for the next 5 years. So going north to south, we wanted to highlight some of the major projects. So starting from the north, we have the Okeechobee Boulevard to Beeline Highway project that's coming in 2026. Southern Boulevard to Okeechobee Boulevard in 2025. In 2024, we have the West Palm Beach Service Plaza to Southern Boulevard. And then in 27, Glades Road to south of Atlantic, and then 25 Broward County Line to Glades Road. So those are all sort of the big major projects that are happening along the Turnpike. Now switching over to 95, we have quite a few interchange projects coming in. So in the earlier years, we have Indian Town Road, Belvedere Road, and 6th Ave in 2023. And in 2025, we have Boynton Beach Boulevard. A little bit later on in 2026, we have North Lake Boulevard and 45th Street. And then in 2027, we have Palm Beach Lakes Boulevard, Hypoluxo Road, as well as Gateway Boulevard. So in addition to those major projects, we do have a lot of CIS network projects coming in. So we wanted to show you you all that in a map. So what you're looking at here is the northern half of Palm Beach County. You're looking at all the projects, and then in green, we have highlighted the Turnpike projects. So in addition to those, we also have projects like the Beeline Highway Traffic Management System. So that's going to be coming in the next few years. That includes traffic management upgrades as well as connected vehicle upgrades. So that's going to be pretty exciting. And we also have some additional 95 projects coming in as well. So Southern Boulevard is going to be a future interchange project that's going to be coming into the TIP soon. Moving south now, we of course have the I-95 widening, which is under construction right now, and also another exciting project, which is the Glades Road interchange. So that's going to be the first diverging diamond interchange in Palm Beach County. That's under construction now, and I think I saw in the paper it's going to be completed sometime around the end of 2023. So that's going to be pretty exciting as well. So in addition to the CIS network, we also have our state road modifications program. So that's about $100 million in the next 5 years. We do want to provide some updates for you all. So I know you're all familiar with the State Road 7 extension, but that is currently delayed. So you may see some funding in 2022 for construction. Most likely that's going to be rolled back based off the current litigation that's going on. And I believe Valerie sent an update on the timeline of everything that's going on with that project. But we'll continue to keep you updated on that as updates are available. In addition to that, we also wanted to provide an update on Atlantic Ave. So there's several projects that are happening on Atlantic Ave that are gonna be kind of combined into one larger consistent project. We are currently working with DOT on some of the segments right now, and we're gonna start working with the Water Management District there to get that project moving forward. So you may be familiar with this because you did just pass a resolution not too long ago. Directing the TPA on guidance on what you all wanted that project to look like. So we are working with our partners to move that forward. And of course, we also wanted to highlight the State Road 80 lighting project. That's gonna be coming in a couple different phases. So once we have some more information on that as well, we'll be updating you all and getting you some more information on that. So in addition to those, we also want to highlight, we have three new projects entering the program, the TIP for design in 2027. So first off, we have Forest Hill Boulevard from Jog Road to Military Trail. That's going to include things like lighting, some transit improvements, crosswalk improvements, as well as some enhancements to the bike lanes. On Congress Ave from Lake Worth to Forest Hill, kind of a similar project, lighting improvements, some enhancements to transit, as well as some crosswalk upgrades. And then in Boca Raton, we have some traffic signal upgrades. Those are going to be replacing quite a few span wires to mast arms. And that is all I have for the state road updates. So I'll pass it back over to Jason. Thank you.
Thank you, Connor. So he went over the first part of the TPA priority projects, which is state road modifications. The other two are local initiatives and transportation alternatives, which are also included in this document and are part of our priority projects. So with local initiatives, it's a 5-year time horizon for those particular projects. It's about $20 million annually. And there's 7 projects that have being provided funding in construction for construction in fiscal year 26 and 27. And those were all listed on the left-hand side here. Some projects that have been making their way through the process and are up for construction in fiscal year 23 are on the right-hand side. And those are in Delray Beach and West Palm Beach. They're Lindell Boulevard and Barwick Road, as well as Parker Avenue. We'll see those being constructed in the next fiscal year. And on occasion, there's projects that don't make it all the way through to construction. And one of those projects that you saw in the previous months was Indian Town Road in Jupiter. That was one of the particular local initiatives projects that was canceled at the request of Jupiter. One thing to note here is when you get to construction, you can see the year and the rank for these particular projects. The year is 2017 and 2018 for these particular projects to be constructed in fiscal year 23, whereas the future year construction for construction in 26 and 27 are the projects that have been recently applied for in the previous years and now are being programmed. So you can kind of get an ideal of the length of time that it takes to access the funding to construct these projects within the local initiatives program. A shorter time frame is for the transportation alternatives program, and that's a 3-year time horizon. It's a smaller pot of money of $9.3 million, and there's about $10.5 million in this particular document. There's a few projects coming up for construction in the next fiscal year 23, and those were prioritized back in 2019 and 2020. And those are on the top of the screen, and there's new projects with new funding in this particular document, and that's for fiscal year 25, and those are listed on the bottom here. And those new projects are Burns Road, El Rio Trail, Grapeview Boulevard and Key Lime Boulevard, and the CA Canal in Wellington. Now that concludes the part of the TPA priority projects. Now I'll just go over a brief overview of some of the other projects that you'll see coming to construction in fiscal year 23. And those are some capacity projects. And there's a larger list in the summary tables in the executive summary and the full draft in the beginning of the tables. There's also some resurfacing and bridge projects also coming up in fiscal year 23, and those are at the bottom of the slides. And this includes both FDOT and Palm Beach County projects within these lists. And lastly, there's some new FDOT projects that we haven't seen in the previous TIP that we see in this particular, in this round. They're all pretty much for fiscal year 26 construction. The resurfacing types of projects, and they're listed here on the slide for US-1, A1A, South Dixie Highway, Lake Worth Road, and Boynton Beach Boulevard. So that concludes the overview of all of the projects. What we asked the board members and the TAC and all of our advisory committees is to review this particular document, look at the accuracy of the projects, and if you have if you're in a lead agency for a TPA priority project, you've applied for a grant, you've received funding for one of those projects, to include that in your capital improvement program, list the local funding, which is the non-participating cost in a particular grant that you've applied for, include the total cost of that project and provide that information to us so we know when it comes to, when you get closer to construction for those particular projects, we know that you're aware of how much you, the local municipality is required to provide for those particular projects. There's also FDOT and Palm Beach County projects that may be in your particular area that you may want to know about in the next 5 to 6 years. And this document will provide that information to you. If you have any corrections or if you want any more information, please reach out to our interim director, Valerie Nielsen, and then she'll direct that to the rest of the staff pertaining to if it's a grant program or if it's a state road modifications. And to facilitate reviewing all of the projects in this particular document, you can go to our website at palmbeachtpa.org. There's a little globe on the landing page. You click on that globe, it'll take you to an interactive map. And with that interactive map, there's a layer at the very top of the map. You can check the box. It'll highlight all of the projects. It should say fiscal year 23 through 27 draft TIP, like it says here on the screen. When you find a particular project in your area, you can click on the lines and that'll have a pop-up that will give you all of the additional information for that particular project to facilitate review of all of the projects instead of actually going, you could go through the entire document, but this is a more interactive graphic way to review the projects in the similar fashion. And so that's all I have for you. I can answer any questions at this time.
And for someone who needs bedtime reading, you can go to palmbeachtpa.org/tip and you can read the whole document and enjoy. I'm sure Mr. Abrams is reading it right now as he's watching this show. Mayor Reed.
I actually don't really necessarily have a question. It's just a couple of what I think are really valid comments. Looking at the TIP, the changes that are happening on Prosperity Farms Road, I want to laud everybody for, it was originally set for resurfacing and now it looks like we're going to have bicycle lanes on Prosperity Farms Road instead of just repaving. So I am really, really thankful that our city was listened to as we're trying to get more mobility and allow people access to our areas when they're not in a car. However, if you look at the project, there really is enough right of way for the bike lane to be buffered, to have some sort of a separation, not just a bike lane. So I'm thinking if we're going to do it, let's do it right. We've gotten this far. And just if we take a look at that map, we're talking about just a little bit more space to make our cyclists that much safer. So I'm not pulling it from the TIP. I want it on the TIP. It's great. Maybe we could just refine it a little bit more to keep our residents safer. The other thing I want to say is that I think it behooves all of us in the municipalities to share our capital improvement projects with the TPA. So if you guys aren't doing that, please do, because I share this interactive map, which is excellent, with my residents all the time. So they understand what is happening in their backyards. So that if you're gonna buy a house, you wanna know if I-95 is gonna be extending into it, right? So you can look at the TIP on the map, you can look at the long range transportation plan, all of it is there. So again, so if all of my friends that are here, please make sure that you've shared your capital improvement projects. And then also kudos to the staff on the interactive map. I spend way too much time on there. It is a great resource, thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Valerie.
Thank you, Jason, Connor, for the presentation. And this is the draft TIP, but our 5-year work program, and we're bringing the final one in the next meeting. But thank you, Mayor Reed, for your comments and for using our interactive map. I highly encourage all of you to use that. It is an opportunity to look at what is coming up in the future in a visual way. You turn on, there's various layers. It's just our website/map, and you can click on the lines and see what that project is. And take advantage of, if it's an upcoming project, such as a resurfacing project, we're also trying to keep an eye out for opportunities to do something better than just resurface the road. So it's a great tool. It's a great resource. We also have a brochure on the counter when you walk in or when you walk out for all of our resources and different interactive tools. So I just wanted to mention that and reiterate that we want this to be a one-stop shop. Even though currently it has the majority of the projects because it has all of the FDOT projects, the county shares with us their projects, and it has the projects we're aware of that we fund through our grants to the local municipalities. We want our local municipalities to tell us what other projects do you have in your capital improvement program so we can add it on here and we can see a cohesive list of everything that's in the pipeline over the next 5 years. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much. And thank you very much for the presentation. I don't see any more comments. Do you have any comments on your end? No. Okay, good. All right, now it's time for Mo to come on up and tell us all of everything you ever wanted to know about signalization in our county.
Good morning, and thank you for having us and give us the opportunity to tell you about the great things that we do for your constituents here in Palm Beach County. With me today to present are Rasim Awad. He is the manager of the traffic signal and ITS systems for Palm Beach County. And Nicholas Jakeda, I think I said it right. He is a consultant for FDOT, who is stationed at our TMC, the Traffic Management Center, at the FISTA Center. FDOT are our partners in operating and maintaining the traffic signal in Palm Beach County for everybody. And they supplement our efforts by providing a team of consultants who are housed in our TMC. Am I doing it wrong? Okay. So today we are going to be giving you a brief information about our traffic division and what we do. After that, we'll have Rasim and Nick talk to you about the traffic signal system and the challenges that we have. And also then we'll talk about a great success story about the collaboration between Palm Beach County and the state, the Florida Department of Transportation, in an initiative called, we call it Active Arterial Management Program, that tries to take care of all the commuters during their work days in a, during their weeks. And then we concluded with ongoing efforts and future outlook for upgrades for our system. Thank you. Traffic division is one of the largest divisions in the Engineering and Public Works Department. We have about 150 employees in the division, and we have an operating budget of $26 million. We have in the traffic division alone 14 professional engineers. Five of them are PhDs, and we have six of them that are also PTOEs, meaning professional traffic operations, certified professional traffic operations engineers. We do design, build, and maintain and operate all traffic control devices on the county roads, roadway system, and we also maintain and operate traffic signals for other jurisdictions, including the Stateway Highway System. We do install pavement markings, striping, signing, et cetera. We also administer the traffic concurrency for the county, the TPS, the traffic performance standards, including the proportion chair. We also do traffic studies for mobility and for safety. We recommend all improvements for roadway design and improvements throughout the county on the county system. We also, of course, maintain the traffic street lighting for the county. Okay. We operate and maintain almost 1,200 traffic signals and school flashers. About 40% of those are on the state highway system, and we operate them on behalf of the Florida Department of Transportation. We have a maintenance and compensation agreement with the state on this, and we get paid roughly $3 million a year for doing that. And we are actually subsidizing the state highway system in the tunes of about $3 million. And we are now in talks with the state to try to bridge that gap. We also operate and maintain almost all the traffic signals on municipal roads, for the exception of the city of Boca Raton and the town of Palm Beach. We do that almost free for them. We even pick up the tab on the utility bills for the municipalities.
We're special in Boca.
That's right. That's due to the generosity of our board members. With this, I will turn it over to Rasim and Nicholas. And at the end, we will, if you care, we would have time for answers to any questions you may have.
All right. Good morning, everyone. Rasim Awad, Signal Systems Manager, Palm Beach County Traffic Division. What you see in front of you is just a quick snapshot of the major elements of our signal system and the major, you know, primary components that we use to operate it and run it. As Mo touched on, we have about 1,100 signalized intersections that we manage in Palm Beach County. 850 approximately of these are connected over a large fiber optic cable network back to our traffic management center. Fiber up top, you see we have about 470 plus miles of fiber. That was a great investment early on by the county that enabled quite a bit of the initiatives that we took and paves the way for the future. CCTV cameras, these are the pan, tilt, zoom cameras that enable us to see the signals and the roadway, identify incidents and react to them in real time, as well as a few other devices that measure speed and travel time for us as we manage the system. A few key milestones. Basically started with the construction of the traffic management center. It's a regional traffic management center. It's a shared facility between the state and the county. That was back in 2007. First few years were quite a bit of integration on the outside and the inside, on the back end of things, to get it up and running. And then the biggest step forward was back in the 2012-2013 timeframe, when there was a collaboration between the state and the county to essentially man the TMC and have folks monitor certain corridors, major corridors in the county, identify incidents, interact with the signal system in real time, and manage these incidents. And that has been a very successful program for us, to where a few years later, it continued to evolve and we expanded it back in 2019 to include many more signals and roadway miles. 2015 was a time when we invested in adaptive systems, and we'll touch on that a little bit later. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Nick. He's one of our signal timing engineers representing FDOT at our Traffic Management Center, who's going to highlight the RTO management program for us.
Thank you, Rasim. So my name is Nicholas Junqueira. I am one of the AMP engineers at the TMC, and I work as an in-house consultant on
behalf. Could you get a little closer to the microphone?
My name is Nicholas Junqueira. I'm one of the AMP engineers at the TMC, and I work as an in-house consultant on behalf of the DOT. So I'll just be going over very quickly the active RTO management program and how it's an integral part of the county's incident management and real-time traffic system monitoring. So the program essentially leverages technology and infrastructure to maximize the efficiency of the transportation system. So this technology allows us to have a proactive system by maximizing safety and vehicular throughput while minimizing delays for the motoring public. It's performance-based. We rank and score performance using metrics such as travel time and travel time reliability. And the result of all this is an integrated program that exists to essentially optimize the performance of the existing multimodal infrastructure. As Rasim mentioned on the previous slide, the active RTO management program started with just one person, and due to its success has expanded in 2019 from 90 traffic signals to 240 traffic signals and 35 roadway miles to 90 roadway miles respectively. So on this slide, I'm just showcasing a typical AMP engineer's workstation, such as the one I use. You can see we have several tools that assist us with monitoring the signal on our arterial network. We use CCTV and video detection cameras to monitor the arterial traffic conditions and catch traffic incidences. Then our central signal system software, ATMS.now, is used to monitor the signal system and adjust signal timing in real time. And lastly, we use probe data to get information on travel time, updates on the status of the arterials, and travel time reliability measures. And thank you for your time. I'll now pass it back over to Rossum, who will go over our ongoing efforts and future outlook.
All right, thank you, Nick. As far as ongoing efforts and future efforts as it pertains to infrastructure and technology, these are some of the primary ones that would obviously prepare us for the future, but also address current needs. When it comes down to infrastructure, we have plans to revamp our traffic management center. Again, it was completed back in 2007 with that type of setup and configuration. So that all needs revamping. We're working with the state on that effort. Secondary that goes hand in hand with that effort is the CCTV camera. Again, we want more eyes on these corridors to ultimately expand the arterial management program, which again has been a great success story. So these two items go hand in hand. We've adopted the advanced traffic controllers, which is the latest industry standard for running the traffic signal. This is the brain of the traffic signal that goes in the silver box next to every cabinet. And then when it comes down to technology, we're constantly testing and evaluating smarter, more intuitive tools. A few years ago, we were investing in hardware out on the street to get us the key measures of speed and travel time. Well, over time, we found that probe data, we're all being tracked with timestamps, gives us significantly better results and reaches better. Covers more roads. Transit signal priority and emergency vehicle preemption. This is a significant effort. We basically married two efforts. One under Pontran, they've secured federal grants to install transit signal priority on certain corridors. We've long had an emergency vehicle preemption that ran for about 10 years or so. However, it needed some improvements that we could not get accomplished through our vendor. So our fire rescue department wanted to invest in a new system. So typically these systems address both of these needs together, and the newer systems have significant technological advantages to the one we had. Connected vehicle applications, back in 2018, we started this initiative. However, it stalled and keeps getting reset due to the data ownership issues that we have with it. However, hopefully there's a workaround that would allow us to experiment with it. We also have a pilot initiated by the state and in collaboration with the county for near-miss detection at certain intersections using video analytics. These are smaller scale pilots that would obviously enable us to experiment and test and validate as we prepare for the future so that we can invest in the right technology, which brings up the point of some of the challenges moving forward. We do want to invest in the right technology. One example is Palm Beach County's experience with adaptive traffic control systems. We installed these at about 50 traffic signals and four major corridors back in 2015. And over a few years, we found that they are unsustainable. They needed significant maintenance. There were reoccurring hardware failures that resulted in consistent operation. So we decided collectively with the state to decommission these systems. Connected vehicle applications that we touched on earlier. A few years back, a number of agencies started deploying hardware to enable connected vehicle and later autonomous applications down the road. However, this hardware depended on a medium called DSRC, dedicated short range communication. So here comes 2021, the FCC ruled that medium out for transportation purposes. So some of these investments become obsolete rather quickly. Vehicle detection, we've invested quite a bit in alternate methods compared to our just standard inductive loops in the pavement. While they have their advantages, they have not been reliable. And then moving on to a second big challenge is the proprietary nature of the signal system industry. Generally, we would love in an ideal world, get the best hardware, marry it with the best central software, and operate our system the best way we can. However, it's really vendor specific. It's not open architecture as we speak. There is a movement to make it open architecture, but it's still a work in progress. Our vendor is one of the primary ones used nationwide at about 20% of the nationwide traffic signals at about 47 Florida agencies. We constantly work with them to improve our system. And then comes the cost, of course, operations and maintenance. Mo touched on, for example, through the state, which most of our primary corridors or major arterials are state owned. The current compensation does not account for these intelligent transportation system devices, nor does it account for the constant upgrade and renewal. These things have a very short life cycle. And just some quick information from a relative or scale standpoint of signal performance. This chart on the right was taken from a recent US signal scorecard published by INRIX. INRIX is a firm that specializes in traffic data analytics and congestion management parameters. The chart on the right ranks the largest MPOs within the state of Florida. Of course, it's a nationwide report scorecard, but when we zoom in at our state, these are the largest MPOs from a signal system size. That's that first column that says signals. This is just going up, you know, from largest to smallest. But the key measures are delay per vehicle. That's the first circled column there. And the delay, daily hours of delay. That's the secondary column. So regionally, we perform very well compared to our neighbors, Broward and Miami-Dade, and even to some of the Western communities like Hillsborough and Pinellas. Florida did rank on the 25 worst urban signalized intersections in that report nationwide. We had 9 intersections out of the worst 25. That's obviously an indication of the population and the traffic demands that we have in the state. Thankfully, Palm Beach County did not have any of these, did not make this ranking. Miami did have a few, and Broward did have a few. And just keeping a close eye on our neighboring counties, Miami-Dade has had an antiquated system. They're investing significantly in overhauling it, about $150 million over the next 10 years. And then Broward County is using Certex funds to expand its fiber network and add adaptive traffic control systems. These, we believe, are items we have already have gotten a head start on and invested on early on in the process. And this concludes our presentation. We'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Under the AAM, Mo, are we giving any prioritization to PalmTran or just emergency vehicles right now?
No, actually, we are working on a project that's funded through the TPA to deploy TSP, the Transit Signal Priority System, and we are in the process of getting the RFP ready. I think it's funded for this corridor, Okeechobee plus SR7, in this coming fiscal year. And there is another funding coming along for US 1. So we are going to be deploying those. We are now almost zoomed in into the system that we want to select. And in doing that, we are trying to select a system that will work also for the emergency vehicle preemption. So we don't have to deal with two different systems, two different vendors, while operating and maintaining the system for both agencies.
Just for my own information, what kind of coordination is there between bridge openings, traffic signals adjoining them, and the same for traffic at railroad crossings? How is that coordinated?
That's the biggest challenge that we have, and you probably witness it a lot here in downtown West Palm Beach. I know some of you live not far from here, and they frequent Okeechobee Boulevard to your frustration, our frustration. We are not getting a lot of help from the railroad operators. Very often they have false calls, we call it preemptions, and that very often those happen, you know, at close proximity to each other. That causes the biggest disruption to any coordinated signal system. I know that the town of Palm Beach, I think, recently reached out to the Coast Guard to try to work with them on changing the scheduling for the bridge opening over the intercoastal waterway. And we were, FDOT reached out to us for input from us. But we are hoping that we'll get better cooperation from the operators of the CSX and FEC. And I think we shared with some of the actual data with the Vice Mayor's Wise's office about how this is happening and how frequently it's happening and the toll it has on our efforts to better coordinate the flow of traffic on along Okeechobee Boulevard.
Vice Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. And thank you, gentlemen, for this presentation. I had requested the TPA asked for this a couple months ago, so I appreciate you guys following up. First question, who's the vendor currently, county's traffic signal vendor that you referenced in your presentation?
Our vendor, you mean for our traffic signal?
Mm-hmm.
It's Cubic.
Cubic, thank you. And then I guess further discussion would be is trying to understand, and I, you know, obviously I'm not an engineer. And the research I do is just, you know, what I can find, you know, Googling online about traffic signalization and what other communities are doing. And I assume you all are looking at these new developments as well. Have you undertaken any kind of studies as to, you know, if looking at best sort of the, and I understand there's in I want to say it's in Pittsburgh, throughout Pennsylvania, there's a lot of interesting things going on. In Israel, there's a lot of interesting things going on. In Japan, they've got some things going on. Are we looking at what they're accomplishing with their traffic throughput, utilizing some of these automated systems, and what that in what that implication could be for our community?
Yeah, we are continually looking at those, and we have already deployed and embraced some of those big technologies that had widespread and had wide promise, including the traffic adaptive signal system. And there are two vendors in the U.S. of this type of technology. And we, through the state, through FDOT, and we always get the state involved, and we get their money or the federal money through them to implement big projects like these. So we did have that one. It's through a company that's called Rhythm, and they had the products called InSync. The other one is SynchroGreen, I believe it's by Cubic. And that SynchroGreen had been implemented by the city of Boca Raton. And actually, Rasim was their signal manager before I grabbed him from there. So he has good hands-on experience with that system. So the system that was deployed in the county, the InSync, we had it first deployed on Okeechobee Boulevard between I-95 and Flagler. And we had it running for more than 6 years. And before we concluded that it was not worth it, it was not giving us what we expected from it. To the contrary, it was creating more disruptions, more headaches, more cost. With DOT, had deployed it by then on three more corridors on North Lake, PGA, and Glades Roads. And we concluded after a long experience with them that we were not getting much from them. The problem is that they have a lot of sensors that depend on, obviously, if you want an intelligent system to work, it has to have more eyes and more ears to get more information to operate. And that many sensors have that vulnerability of going bad. Most of them are proprietary and they are closed black box, and it was not a pleasant experience. So we determined with FDOT that we did not want to have them anymore, and we pulled the plug on them.
I think it's fair to say, I mean, signal technology that we see today in most places is basically, although it's become digital, it used to be analog with a clock turning,
it basically the same system where it runs and it just set at certain times, and it just goes through its cycles with really no intelligence at all as to, other than the closed loop system where, you know, where they signal a demand for a left turn or something like that. But the interesting thing, and I want to really thank Rasim for his help, noticed I was watching at the intersection of Okeechobee and Parker there, as the trains would send the arms down, the cycle had no clue that it had just offered a left turn and now was offering a left turn again and starting the whole thing all over again. So cars were never moving because the arms would keep coming down and nobody would move, except that left turn light would keep going on. And then by the time the arms came back up, and Rasim was able to figure out what was going on and provide some change to, you know, understanding if the cycle happened twice, to reprogram the switch. But we're still talking about technology that's, you know, I mean, it's pretty primitive. Honestly, it really is. I mean, it's not a lot of automation in the sense of what we see gains being made in other things in our lives. The signal technology is virtually the same as it was 100 years ago. So I think there's just a lot of improvement. It's unfortunate that the funding doesn't provide for throughput as a way of justifying the expense that we can use those funds by increasing the throughput in an intersection, as opposed to adding, you know, simply adding more lanes. But that's something, I guess, that from a policy perspective that we should also be considering. But I appreciate the update. I honestly believe there's a lot of improvement we could have through better signalization. I've seen it in other communities. As we all, you know, potentially travel around the country, you can go to communities and see, you know, when there's little demand and at that time of day, you go pull up to a light, and if there's nobody else coming, the light changes, and which is, rather than cars sitting there and idling and wasting fuel and polluting the environment. And the same thing holds true for pedestrians and bicyclists too. The idea of having to push a button to request the light change. I mean, there's technology to detect that there is a human being or a bicycle at that intersection and asking without having to ask for that cycle to be offered to them.
Chairman, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
There are a lot of things that I wanted to comment on, but, you know, one of them is that passive detection for pedestrians and vehicles, etc. We are working with vendors and we are looking at those technologies. Those technologies are not good enough. They are not reliable enough to deploy them and depend on them. Actually, the TPA staff worked on a project to do just that, and they are working with us on it. They are not there yet, but we are still engaging those vendors, and we are actually, we met not long ago with the Bosch camera vendors, and they are gonna be giving us a camera system that we will deploy here on Okeechobee Boulevard at Rosemary to just test their product. So, yeah, you mean that use the phone signal? Again, there are challenges with that. The technology is not there yet. And the phone signal, you can get the phone signal, but you cannot predict which direction the pedestrian is going and whether the pedestrian is gonna be distracted and working on his phone, standing on the curbside for 3 minutes, 5 minutes or not. So the other thing that I wanna say is there is no such signal technology that or systems that can allow you to go on autopilot. And they are so smart that you can just turn them on and they do it all and they react. If there was such a system, it would not be a secret. Everybody would be having it. We are feeling much better than our neighbors to the south. We have invested and built a fiber optic communication system that is almost 500 miles in length. Broward County is now catching up to us. We completed that almost more than 10 years ago. Miami, again, in the presentation, we showed it, are spending $150 million to replace their antiquated traffic signal controller system. We are on top of it, and we are engaging the vendors. We are looking at technologies, trying to improve. One thing that I want to caution, when you compare any system or signal system that you come across, you need to remember that there are unique, specific circumstances that impact the operation of any corridor that are unique to them. One of those unique ones is Okeechobee Boulevard. Within less than a mile, you have two railroad crossings that are busy and active, and you have the drawbridge on the other side. Those present huge challenges, and we spoke about this before. So the active arterial management system that we have now is one of the best. Generally, traffic is predictable, and most of the traffic signals are programmed and timed based on the historic data. What makes, you know, the disruptions happen are incidents, okay? And I can call those incidents, even the railroad preemption are incidents, crashes, whatever. And the best way to react to those is what we exactly are doing with DOT, with this active arterial management program, where we have our folks sitting on the fourth floor at the Vista Center, watching for any red flags. And they actually use, in addition to the technology that is deployed along those corridors, the major corridors, they also use the free available maps, Google Maps and others, where they will identify any disruption that happens in traffic flow live. They immediately engage and use the CCTV cameras to zoom in and verify what's happening there. They develop changes to signal timings, and they, through our communication system, the fiber optic communication system, they download those changes and help reduce the impact of the incident. We again used, and we had the traffic adaptive signal system in place on Okeechobee and others. It did not help. We found that the active arterial management is the most effective when you have folks watching live and can communicate directly with the equipment on the road, and they can affect changes that would take care of it, utilizing the CCTV cameras as their eyes to verify and see what's happening. I don't know if Russ wants to add anything, or Nick.
Vice Mayor, I'm going to suggest we take this offline, you know, because I think it's getting into the weeds at this point. Okay, very good. Well, I'm sure the Vice Mayor will reach out to you, Mo. Okay. Commissioner Diaz.
Thank you. I do echo Vice Mayor Weiss's concerns about improving certain technologies, especially detecting on bikes and pedestrians. But one thing I wanted to quickly ask, and maybe I can reach out to you after, but is there a efficient or, you know, a mechanism that users or municipalities we can report, you know, suggestions of improvements? Really big example that I can think of right now is literally right in front of our city hall, 4-lane US-1, 2 turn lanes, median. The pedestrian crossing doesn't give enough time for, you know, healthy adults to cross. Nonetheless, anybody who's disabled or older, but also at the same time, the turning lane from Lake Ave to turn left is green at the same time as the pedestrians are crossing. So is there like a, you know, what is the best way that we can bring those problems to light so they can be resolved?
That's great. We actually rely and truly appreciate feedback from residents or whoever. And as I said, the Vice Mayor Wise had been a great help for us. He always calls us and or sends emails when he observes anything that he thinks is not right. In the last slide in our presentation, we listed several means of communicating with us. They are posted on our website as well. We have email addresses and phone numbers to report, depending on the nature of the issue that you want to report. And we devised that so that you do not have to deal with a middleman. Based on the nature of the concern that you have, you would go directly to the team that is handling that particular concern. and we always welcome that. And we also work with the municipalities. We were, I think, at the workshop for the village of Wellington not long ago, Rasim and myself presenting and engaging with them on a project within Wellington, modifying a couple of their signals there.
Thank you. I just wanted to make sure we're not like flooding your inbox. I'm sure you have plenty to do. So just wanted to make sure that was efficient.
Mo lives for these. Thank you. All right. I think we have exhausted this topic. And I'm going to see, do we have any other public comments, Margie?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay, very good. We're going to move on then to our partner agencies. And I know that Mr. Abrams is still on the line and is eager to put his input in. So, Stephen, you are on.
All right. Can you hear me, Mr. Chairman?
We can hear you.
You have me? All right. Just a quick comment, by the way, on the signalization, because I heard that the railroads were mentioned a couple times. And yes, we do have what we call preventative closures in case a train overshoots a station where there's a major intersection, which I know is a great point of consternation for motorists. I know, Mr. Chairman, you have brought it to our attention with regard to the Boca Raton station overshooting Yamato. And it's certainly a pet peeve of our chairman. I don't know if Commissioner Marino is still on the line. So we've been actually looking at technology to deploy and, in fact, have a demonstration project using wireless technology at the Banyan Crossing in West Palm Beach. So hopefully more, if that pans out, we'll have a solution to that. As far as generally with respect to SFRTA and Tri-Rail, just to report that our ridership is increasing. Of course, it helps to have $4 and now approaching $5 gallons of gas. And we definitely see a correlation with our ridership when that occurs, although we actually have to pay more ourselves in terms of fuel, but at least we get the benefit of additional ridership. And in fact, now we are, Tri-Rail is in the top 10 of commuter railroads in the country based on average weekday ridership. When I started as executive director, I think we were 14th. So we're with the big boys now, Metro North, Long Island Railroad. I think you were an LIRR commuter once, SEPTA, which I grew up with. I don't know if Mayor Wilson's on the line, MBTA in Boston. He probably rode it when he was a little kid. But we actually had the second highest percentage ridership increase of those top 10 railroads last year. And so a lot keeping us busy. We're still working on getting into downtown Miami by the end of the year and have a project schedule that outlines how we're going to accomplish that. And as I mentioned, I get to work with Commissioner Marino, who is the chairman of our agency now. More could you ask for? So that's my report, Mr. Chairman. Glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Abrams. Anybody have any questions? Seeing no questions, thank you again for the report. Palm Tran, I see you're here. You have any comments? You're going to leave it to Todd to carry the water. Mr. Von Laren.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you, Mayor. And appreciate the remarks of Director Abrams on PalmTran, on RTA, and much like some of the ridership that he is seeing increases in, we too at PalmTran are seeing some other increases that look good. We've seen a 19% increase this month over last month in 2021 at the same time. We've seen approximately a 13.7 increase in our ridership from last month to February to March of 2022. But the reality is that we're still, overall down about 30% from pre-COVID in our ridership with PalmTran. We expect that as we continue to see the gas prices increase, that's when other people start looking for other means of transportation, and they're turning to rail and tri-rail, and they're also turning to PalmTran. We've also been recognized for a number of great awards from some of our national associations for our Hispanic Heritage Month buses that we had out on the roadway, as well as our Paradise passes. We had a couple of first place awards for that as well. But one of the things that we're continuing to work through as a transit agency is a shortage in drivers. There are operators that we're seeing all over the country, not just here in Palm Beach County, that are in high demand. And they're seeing high wages for some of the work that they're doing with a number of private corporations that we are competing with currently. And we're doing the best that we can as an agency and also working with our contractors to ensure that our fixed route transit, as well as our transportation disadvantaged is funded. We'll be back out on the street soon with an RFP bid for our transportation disadvantaged services. So that'll be a little bit later on this year. And then finally, I wanted to just add on June 2nd, we'll be having our economic summit here in Palm Beach County. And I wanted to personally thank Director Nielsen for agreeing to moderate our transportation panel, of which Mayor Weinroth will be a participant, Stephen Abrams will, Clinton Forbes, our director from PalmTran, as well as Jerry O'Reilly, our DOT district secretary. So we look forward to a robust conversation and it also leading to continued conversations here at the TPA. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Bondler. And any questions? Seeing none, you are excused. All right. Any other partner agencies who want to step up? Seeing nobody race to the microphone, we're going to go to administrative items. These are items that are submitted for your information only. No presentations are being made. Anybody have any questions on anything that's been presented? I see none. All right. Our next meeting is going to be June 16th, 2022, 9 a.m. right here. We are adjourned.